Okay, here we are back. And yes, we're going to spend a little more time on cellulitis, group A strep. Let me preface this by again mentioning that 17 years ago, a variant came up that had never been seen before in the group A strep issue of serious infection, which turned out to be M1UK. M1UK. And it happens to be 950 times more virulent, 950% more virulent, which suggests that it has increased the already fast mechanism by which group A strep can run into and through a body and cause terrible injuries, necrotizing fasciitis, and death. And we're seeing people now who are really in trouble with this. And I would suggest that after 17 years, the more dominant, new, more virulent strain is probably running the show. And lovely Erica loves to send me the most grotesque pictures you can imagine of people with group A strep. And she sent me some whoppers today. This is not a joke. And if you have an infection that you're suspicious of, now, this is going to drive a lot of people to the ER who don't have group A strep. They're afraid. That's part of the territory. But in this case, we implore you not to take any unnecessary chances. This can kill you in 48 hours. So if you've got any weird infection, strange swelling, and usually it's often, most often perhaps in the legs, swelling in the calf, swelling in the thigh, swelling in the ankle, and you have injured yourself, somehow broken the skin recently, go in and have them examine it, look at it, and they should put you on antibiotics. If you have anything like swelling, discoloration, or any of that, don't play games. This is serious, deadly business. And we don't like to do this, but we're not going to lie to anybody. Welcome back there, kiddo. How are you?
Well, I'm good. Thank you. Enjoying some heavy rain here tonight.
I like rain. I like the sound of it. I don't like to be out in it, but I like the sound of the roof.
Yeah, as long as you can get away from it, right?
It's true. It's true. So, where do we want to go with this? Cellulitis, group A strep. All right, here's one. Let me just read this real quick. No names. Ended up with cellulitis, group A strep, while on vacation in Key West. I've never had it before. I flew home today, and wow, it is really swollen and sore. Saturday night, I received an IV of clindamycin, an oral clindamycin. I'm about ready to head to the ER. The pain is unbearable. So this, again, someone just went on a little trip. It can happen in your front yard because this particular bacteria lives on your skin. It's not that you're going to pick it up necessarily from an outside source. It's on your skin, and it gets driven under the skin with a puncture or any kind of a cut, scratch, scrape, and it can take off. And it takes off, and it heads in to your body and laterally under your outer layers of the epidermis. It's not good. Go ahead.
Yeah, well said, well said. So, as I've explained previously, every case of cellulitis is not necessarily caused by group A strep. There are a number of different bacteria that could be at play, but if it is group A strep, I mean, that's when you really cannot afford to wait. You've got to get it under control quickly, because if it gets into the deeper layers or it gets into the bloodstream, that's when it really takes off, and at that point, it starts to basically kill tissue. And once you have necrotic tissue in your body, that's an invitation for other bacteria to come in and really have a party.
Right.
So it gets out of control very fast. Nurse Ann related the story of one patient they were tending to in her hospital last week, where it happened to start, I think she said, on her torso. And by the time they went in to try to figure out where it was coming from and remove the dead tissue, it had already spread to her thigh. And, you know, so that gives you some idea of how fast this can spread, from a superficial wound. And sometimes you can't even identify where the portal of entry was. And it may be distal from the entry point where the infection actually
manifests.
It
may or may not. There's no guarantee on that. The entry point may not even become obviously infected.
Right. And I collected some stories of some kids now that a lot of times with kids it manifests as strep throat. And a year or two ago,
Let me help or try. We need to clear this up. Strep throat does not necessarily come from a puncture of your inner throat lining, your tonsils, or whatever. It just resides there, and it finds its own way into your internal epidural or epidermis, and it goes into your system there, and it often goes in through the tonsils. But no, go ahead. It's not like a puncture.
Everybody is colonized by this strain of group A strep. I think the statistics were something like 15% of preschoolers carry this particular strain. And, some of them are not affected by it. And
did they give
an
adult projection?
No, it was just, I think, because the strep throat is so characteristic or common with children, they looked at, well, what is the percentage of kids that actually carry this?
Got it.
You know, as part of their microbiome. And so it is contagious. Kids pick it up from each other. They can pick it up from somebody else who has strep throat or an open wound. It is ubiquitous in the environment. You don't know who, where, when, what, because there are asymptomatic carriers.
It's part of the terrain out there. Okay.
I mean, and it does beg the question, why are so many kids now, or I wouldn't say just kids, but just the population in general.
It's moving rapidly into a much more common infection. We've got some readers here about
Well, I just wanted
children.
To add this to that, because, it does beg the question, why suddenly is this now a problem? I would offer that we can cite the obvious that's on everybody's radar these days is the vaccine. The vaccine has, we know which vaccine we're talking about, has decimated people's microbiome. We don't know the extent to which our native microbiome has been altered by this poison. And, it doesn't seem to matter whether you're injected or not. This stuff is now spewing. The microbiome of the vax has been altered, and that bacteria can be picked up by your microbiome, depending on how much contact you have and what kind of species of bacteria you have.
Are we talking about internal digestive microbiome or other
types? I would say skin, oral cavities, just everything. I mean, we are more bacteria than we are human cells. And we also know that the spike protein acts like a phage. In that, if a bacteria internalizes this thing, it changes its genetic expression. So it may begin producing proteins that it doesn't normally produce. And the best example of that is the Italian research showing that these various species of bacteria that inhabit the gut, when they were exposed to SARS-CoV-2 virus, they began spewing out, these conotoxins, toxic snail toxins and snake venom-like peptides.
Don't say snake
and,
venom.
And you can imagine how sick that would make somebody.
Right.
So, the bacterial involvement in response to or in connection with, either the vaccine or the virus, I think is orders of magnitude of what's being currently appreciated.
I agree.
And I would say just in general, because we have to remember that even before this bioweapon was released on us, strep was on the rise. This particular strain of group A strep was on the rise for a good 10 years. And it's going up and up and up. And you might blame the loss of diversity in the microbiome, because there are other species of strep that produce antimicrobial peptides that fight against this particular strain of strep. For example, Streptococcus salivarius, which is an inhabitant of the oral cavity. And when children are born, babies are born, they receive this bacteria from their mothers as you know, they're making their way through the birth canal, and they are colonized by this Streptococcus salivarius within 24 hours, I would say. So, but that also brings up the point of how many kids now are being born by C-section.
Who don't get the benefit of natural colonization. They don't have
that's
it.
That's right. That's right. So that's huge when it comes to the immune system. I mean, they're not being properly colonized as they were once upon a time. And I mean, these kids are paying the price.
Yeah. Yeah,
and not to mention,
very sad.
The childhood vaccine schedule that, you know, is the kiss of death these days.
No, I just can't even imagine doing that to a child, putting them through this vaccine schedule. I can't imagine it. It just doesn't make sense. There's nothing there, nothing, and except pain, anguish, death, suffering. You're going to have trouble. Time I've heard of somebody who says, I never vaxxed my daughter or my son, and he's always been healthy. No problem. There's your answer.
Yeah.
It's right there.
Yep. The number I have, the number that's being bandied about these days, is the child, I think by the time he's five, goes to kindergarten, will have received 72 doses of 16 different vaccines.
No, I can't even believe. Can you imagine being a doctor or a nurse who puts this shit in kids? I can't.
Yeah.
I can't. What happened to the Hippocratic Oath? There's nothing there to back up what they're doing except big money from big pharma.
Yeah, well, they're just accepting that these things are safe and effective and, you know, somehow beneficial.
Well, that kind of blind obedience is going to get you nothing but grief, believe me.
Well, there's enough awareness of this now that there's going to be some pushback, and I don't know how they're going to address it or negotiate some sort of...
Right.
I don't know.
All right, we've got some things here. You want to jump into some of these? You put together a pretty powerful group. Kids dying from Group A strep. That's the first one that caught my eye, but where do you want to start?
Oh, you pick.
All right, well, let's pick that one.
Okay.
Kids dying from Group A strep. Now, these are posts from social media groups, and I'm not going to mention any names, but I'll read the text. I lost my son to strep A and sepsis on Christmas Eve. Take this very seriously and demand they are checking absolutely everything. He died in just 2 days. Someone writes back, I'm so sorry for your loss. It's a terrible illness. And another person says, I too lost my four-year-old to sepsis caused by strep A. I am so sorry for your loss. I was in October last year and It was in October last year, and I still can't believe what happened. He passed away so suddenly after just 2 days. We didn't know what it was, only that something was wrong, but then it was too late. Another? My heart goes out to you both. And there was a photograph posted, and regarding the photograph, my husband had necrotizing fasciitis 4 years ago and parts of his skin. Is gone. It's been like this since the illness. Well, I can't have the picture up, so you can't see it. But and someone responds to that, the original poster. If you ever want to chat, I'm open to whatever. I can't handle this life without him. Her little son. 48 hours, and they're gone. This is really beyond rapid. This is lightning quick, so be very, very careful out there. All right, go ahead. We got Group A strep survivor, three, and
I got another one here. Kids with Group A strep. Okay. My 8-year-old son died on Halloween.
God, there's another one.
Less than 24 hours after being seen at an urgent care. He was diagnosed with strep. They ordered a culture, but then it was canceled after a rapid test came back positive. Is it true that a culture is the only way to tell if it is invasive strep A? Someone replies, so sorry for your loss. It really is a horrible illness, and I had never heard of invasive group A strep until my son was diagnosed at the end of January. He had a severe swollen neck and facial nerves dropped, and if it wasn't for me noticing that, it was put down as mumps. But he was admitted to the hospital and had an operation the following day. We were only told about upon discharge how serious it was. What symptoms
now, that's
did your
interesting.
Son have?
This group A got into his facial neurology, and apparently it affected his facial configuration. The mother saw it. Creepy.
Yeah, well, prior to that, it looked like mumps, so he had the swollen jaw.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how insidious
swollen
is it?
Neck on both sides of the jaw. Go ahead.
Someone replies, my son had a severe swollen neck, too, that looked like textbook mumps, but they dismissed it as a viral infection at our local urgent care center. If he had been started on antibiotics, then I think we may have been able to avoid the sepsis. He made a full recovery, and I feel so incredibly lucky knowing it could have been different.
Wow, these things are dreadful. There's two, the next two have pictures. There's a little boy laying in a hospital bed. Got tubes
yeah,
in him.
So he had chicken pox. Now remember, some of these cases of strep can come following a viral infection. Now chicken pox is a viral infection, so here we go. You can still see he's got chicken pox.
Yep.
Complicated now by group A strep.
Yeah, there's a quote under it. Go ahead with that.
Hello, I'm new here. I'm posting as I'm not clued up to invasive strep. My 2-year-old developed chickenpox, and that's how it got into him. He spent 5 days in hospital. Now he is home with 3 medications, and we go back every few days. He's had a good day today. Now he is so tense with pain, and I don't get it. What is this thing?
What is this thing? Yeah, that's the question. All right, there's another little picture here, a little short comment. We have also just been discharged after 3 days of IV antibiotics and brought them home. This is a little, maybe a year and a half old boy, it looks like. Face is swollen. And brought them home to continue as he wouldn't keep IV in anymore. It's so scary. We also got invasive strep through a pox.
Yeah.
Again, it's just pox, but I assume it's chicken pox. Yeah. Now, this is crazy. Here's another one. Please look into using biocidin.
Oh, wait, you're reversed here.
Okay. That was the next one right after the little boy, I think.
Okay, go ahead, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine.
Please look into using biocidin. I've never heard of biocidin.
Oh, okay. So biocidin is it's kind of an herbal antimicrobial. It has many different antimicrobial herbs in it, and it's something that you can take, you know, with meals that will keep pathogenic bacteria from hopefully colonizing your gastrointestinal tract, but it probably has some systemic effects as well. But it's, you know, a way of just pushing back on these pathogenic microbes that are looking for an opportunity to move in.
Right. And the person also adds biocidin, comma, adrenal cocktail, comma, magnesium, and cod liver oil for your baby. Mine had strep 10 times in a year. The doctors kept throwing low-dose antibiotics for 10 days each time, and it kept coming back. Last round was high dose Augmentin. That's an antibiotic. Then she was on Biocidin and above supplements for 3 months. And we went strep 3 for almost 2 years until she encouraged again, encountered it again, I think is what she's trying to say,
again.
In school. You can private message me. We scheduled a call with Dr. Blah, 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 who told us about the Biocidin. So these are people reaching out trying to help each other. All right, go ahead. There's another one.
All right. I just need some advice.
Yeah.
We've got two others up top. Baby's
gotcha.
Dying.
I see him.
Just need some advice. My 8-year-old daughter had strep A on the 6th of September. Extreme neck pain, high fevers, vomiting, and went on a 10-day course of penicillin. She would have finished the last lot of antibiotics on the 15th. Wednesday the 18th, she was crying in excruciating pain about her legs and the veins in her wrists hurting and has that mottled skin appearance. Have a doctor's appointment tomorrow morning. Should I ask them to do more tests? And what type? Thank you. I appreciate your responses.
What the hell is that? Is that sepsis or is this just raging throughout the entire physiology?
Well, according to this throat culture, it came back as heavy growth of strep pyogenes.
Yeah, that's
a
common
strep.
One. Oh, but all over the body like that, that's not an isolated swollen wrist or leg or calf or any, that's everywhere.
Well, you know, here's the thing. When this bacteria start to proliferate, they manufacture toxins.
Uh-huh.
And so in addition to the damage that the bacteria does itself in basically dissolving your red blood cells and to some extent your white blood cells and chewing up your tissue, these toxins that are released, two of them are called pyrogenic, meaning they generate fever, but they are so inflammatory and they provoke the immune system. No, much like the spike protein, in a very unnatural way. So the immune system overreacts, and, you know, you get this almost allergic response to these toxins. And they can circulate all over the body.
It's so, again, what she's saying, this is really important. It's not necessarily always just the bacteria. It's their, we'll call it, waste products or what they release. It's their toxicity.
Yeah.
And that causes
and so,
the body to go crazy. Go ahead.
Yeah, it provokes this very, very aggressive T-cell response, which, you know, normally with an infection, you only want less than 1% of your T-cells to become active. These bacteria, because they produce super antigens, both strep and staph, will activate up to 30% of your T-cells. And that's crazy. So these T cells start getting released all over the body, and they don't actually neutralize the toxin because of the way this works. But they end up damaging your tissues. And so that's when what we call a cytokine storm. You get all of these inflammatory mediators that are being released all over the body, destroying your tissues and not actually killing the pathogen.
Got it.
So
right.
When that goes systemic, you walk away, if you survive this thing, with all kinds of damage. I mean, we have, I sent you some stories of people that have lost their fingers.
Yep.
That had to be amputated. I mean, wherever this stuff ends up, if the tissue dies, it's got to be removed.
Right. It has
but
to
all
be.
This happens so quickly that sometimes you just isn't enough time. You can't get ahead of it.
Two more comments below that.
Okay, someone says, my advice would be not to wait and actually take her straight to the hospital now. My daughter nearly died from strep A last year and had all of the above symptoms. Trust your gut, please. And she continues, I thought she had meningitis, but it turned out to be invasive strep. She has had 7 operations on her hips and leg since and spent a fair amount of time in hospital. I don't want to scare you, but it can change very quickly.
All right, let's jump back up to babies. Trigger warning. Baby death, sepsis. Posting for awareness of other parents of small babies. Tomorrow will be 7 weeks exactly since we lost our precious little girl. Not a minute in the day goes by that our hearts don't hurt. It still doesn't feel real. I still pick up little items of her clothing and smell them, holding on to all I have that of her to feel her close for a moment. Sepsis took her from us, caused by invasive group A strep. She wasn't feeding as normal during the night, quite unsettled, but that was pretty normal. High temperature in the morning and a strange cry. Her eyes said, "Help me." It all happened so quickly, within hours. The evening before, she was happily babbling away. 12 hours later, she was having every test possible in A&E to find out why she could be so doing so poorly. A further 12 hours, and she was gone. I held her as it happened, but to me, I still can't comprehend that she's gone. We held you for a moment. We'll love you forever, always in our heart, forever on our minds, our beautiful baby, Sophia. This is not to be taken lightly. Terrible.
It's just, I don't know, what would you say, she's 6 months old, if that?
Yeah, if that. Yeah. There's a follow-up to that. Go ahead.
I am so sorry. We almost lost my grandbaby in February to the same thing. I know your pain. We are now mourning the loss of both her feet, 4 fingers on her left hand and 4 tips of her fingers on her right hand. She had just learned to walk before she got sick. Since my grandbaby got sick, I am seeing more and more of what strep A can do. There's just not enough awareness.
No.
Another person says, no, there really isn't. It's shocking.
No.
I am so sorry for your loss. She was such a beautiful baby. Thank you for being so brave, making us aware of how dangerous strep A can be. And then a couple more sorries. Sorry, the last one. Oh, my God, I am so sorry. Such a beautiful baby girl. We nearly lost our 8-year-old in May of 2023. She was in septic shock caused by invasive group A strep. Now she is okay, but sadly lost her 2 legs below the knee. And some digits in both her hands. Terrifying and so sudden. My deepest sympathy for you.
All right, there are 3 more. The first one is just a picture. I can't describe it too well. Woman in the hospital, half of her head shaved, and an enormous suture line from her forehead, where the hairline would be, in the center, going all the way to the back, and then down behind, and coming forward above the ear. They had to operate. They told her she had a 1 in 3 chance of survival. All right, and then one of the last two. Hi, I wonder if anyone has experienced anything similar. I had invasive strep A in January, which started as a sore throat and an incredibly painful foot and lower back, to the point of not being able to walk or even move. The invasive strep A attacked my lungs, and I was on a ventilator for 4 days. Long story short, my foot is still sore, and having had an ultrasound, the doctors think it is gout, or could be gout if it fits with the profile. My question is whether anyone else has developed gout or any other similar arthritis as a result of strep A. Seems coincidental that this pain came in and on at the exact same time as strep A. Many thanks. Go ahead and finish that.
I would ask them to check for osteomyelitis. Now, that's an inflammation of the bone. As my daughter had invasive strep A over a year ago, which affected her hips. But then that turned into osteomyelitis, which is a bone infection. And then that affected her growth plates, the head of her femur, and her pelvis. Better to be safe than sorry. They can check it with blood cultures, I think. I hope the pain stops soon. She replies, thank you, I will look into that. And then this other one adds, it can affect any bone at any time in your life, even from just a knock at some point, which I had no clue about. Absolutely insane. Good luck. And this one says, my son had invasive group A strep and developed cellulitis in his hand as a result. He later developed sepsis, too. It could be worth checking for cellulitis.
Wow. All right. There's two more. I'll take the top one. Hi, Aaron, whoever Aaron was. It sounds so traumatic. I have had secondhand experience of this with this, as my husband developed a very bad sore throat on a Tuesday last February. And by Saturday, he had STSS, it's like toxic shock, strep toxic shock, and had died. It's also sudden, with no reason to it. He was 35 and very healthy. I blamed myself for a long time for not getting him to the hospital earlier, and even earlier in the week. I still think if he had had antibiotics, it would be different. I ended up with PTSD, so I can only imagine how you felt. I hope you are looking after yourself really well and sending lots of love to you. It will take a long, long time to heal emotionally, but I hope you find all the support and strength you need.
Okay, last one. That sounds horrendous. I had a similar experience with invasive strep A in January, which started as a sore throat and ended up with me being on a ventilator for 5 days in such pain in my lower back and foot that I couldn't walk. I had to send my two children to family 130 miles away for a month so that I could get better. Terrible few months. And sometimes I can hardly believe it happened, except I have the scars and the extra banister up the staircase to keep it fresh in my mind. It's hard to find people to talk to and understand. Message me if you need to chat. I'm in the UK.
Wow. All right. Well, that's our update again on Group A strep. Don't freak out, but for goodness sakes, don't take chances. If you've got something in a child, a partner, a friend that doesn't look right and is weird, go have it looked at. It's okay. Just go. This is not a joke. All right, we have a couple videos here. this issue now of ivermectin is beginning to be targeted by the pharmaceutical monolith and government agencies that are backing it. There's war been declared on ivermectin. They're trying to say a lot of bad things about ivermectin. It's a slanderous campaign of fear. It's wrong. And we've got a video to play on that. And this unfortunately has to do with Mike Yeadon. Dr. Mike Yeadon, chief scientist of Pfizer for decades, I believe. He's really taken a major turn away from where he originally was presenting himself. He first joined the no virus campaign. There are no such things as viruses out there, said Dr. Mike. And now he's apparently going after ivermectin, I guess.
Well, yeah, that happened, I don't know, was it two months ago, maybe three?
Yeah, it was a while.
Yeah, he you know, claimed it was a infertility, a very, what was it? Aggressive anti-fertility agent.
Right, right. All right, here's the video. Now, we're queued up here. You want to set this up? I'm trying to do without my regular audio here. Nanotechnology. Did Mike Yeadon say there was evil nanotech and ivermectin? Is that what this is?
No, Mike Yeadon did not say that, but other people have said that. I don't know if it's La Quinta Columna or those people, but you know, that's another rumor that's
right.
Being spread around the internet, you know,
no,
attempting
not,
to scare people
true.
Off.
Ivermectin may be the most safe and effective pharmaceutical product ever. It's astonishing. I think there were billions of doses given and something like 5 or 6 alleged negative reactions. It's as safe as it could possibly be.
Yeah,
so
I mean, there are, you know, a few caveats, you know,
always.
That you should be aware of
common
before
sense.
Taking it. You know, if you're taking other pharmaceuticals like statins or the HIV protease inhibitors, some of the calcium channel blockers, glucocorticoids like dexamethasone and lidocaine and benzos, that might be a concern with ivermectin because they use the same pathway to be metabolized. And then, of course, if you know, you don't want it in the brain. If you know, if you've got a leaky blood-brain barrier, that's something that you'd want to consider before taking ivermectin because you don't want it in the brain. But for the vast majority of people, it is quite safe.
Right.
And it's been tremendously beneficial. Did I include that testimonial that there was a woman in the vax injury group that had suffered for, I don't know, 3 years now, and she finally found something that gave her tremendous relief, one of which was ivermectin combined with red light therapy. It's really, really quite a story.
Yes. Yeah, that is. Red light therapy is an unsung hero. It does really good things for people.
Yeah, so it's tremendously, if you get the right, you want the right wavelength.
Right.
And, you know, basically what they're selling on the internet now has the two wavelengths that you would want to have the benefits of this mitochondrial stimulation and anti-inflammatory effects. But it really, it does provide tremendous anti-inflammatory relief. They know that it's, was it the TLR4, which is one of the big cytokines that's high for when the spike protein is in the brain. So when you shine this red light on the skull, it actually penetrates deep enough to provide anti-inflammatory response in the brain.
Fascinating. Well,
yeah.
That's wave. As Tesla said, it's all frequencies. That's what he said.
Yeah. So the mitochondria really like that red light.
Right. Okay, and we need our mitochondria to be happy and healthy. For sure. Here's Dr. William Mackus, Dr. Shoemaker, don't know the other guy, Dr. William Ray,
Bay.
I guess it is.
Bay, B-A-Y, he's from Australia.
Bay, right. And they're going to talk a little bit about the ivermectin controversy, which is obviously contrived and being intentionally unleashed on people. Ivermectin is a phenomenal product. All right, here we go. Let's listen.
Who really read and know the science. Awesome.
I have a question for all of you, and this has been posted on our Facebook group. There's one of our members were saying...
Can you hear that okay?
I can.
Okay. Well, if you can, everybody can.
Right. There was nanotechnology and ivermectin. Is that true? Is it false, or is it in some ivermectin, or is it not in it at all? And,
okay, so the question is there evil nanotechnology in ivermectin that might pose a danger? That's the general question this guy is trying to put out.
Your post, William Mackus, and I see you helped out a lot of people. I see it online. It's helped. I know there's a gentleman in our area's got stage 4 cancer, and I believe he's had the shots, but I don't think he's connecting the two at all. It's really upsetting to watch all this unfold.
Yeah, I mean, I could just sort of briefly tell you that
this is Dr. William Mackus.
I haven't seen any evidence of that. I haven't seen anyone sort of come out with any sort of testing or any kind of, you know, proof. I mean, you know, with something like that, you sort of need, you'd want to have proof. You'd want to have, you know, solid evidence. And I think this is where, you know, Kevin McKernan and sort of his work, I think, is sort of sets an example, right? Because if you're going to come out and say, well, there's contamination of some kind, right? And let's say there's, you know, especially if you're going to come out and say, well, there's contamination in the vaccines. Well, you better be able to prove it, and you better be able to show proof of that, and you better be able to have ways of testing and so on. And I think the work that, you know, Kevin McKernan, Philip Buchholz, David Speaker, Jessica Rose, I mean, they put in the work, And it's hard work. It's hard work to provide enough evidence and to then publish it, put it out for peer review, get it out there, put it under scrutiny. And that's, you know, that's what they've done with the contamination, which I think was fantastic work, important work. It's sending shockwaves in Australia. The Florida Surgeon General Dr. Joseph Latipo, brought it out as a reason why the vaccines should probably be immediately suspended. So, but if you're going to, you know, put out something like that, you have to give a lot of evidence, I think, to show that.
And this is Dr. Chris Shoemaker now. He's going to unload on the critics.
To join you on this topic, William, the question at the beginning was, is there contamination in ivermectin? I think that is just a falsehood. That's just something that's being put out there by people who want to stir the soup against our point of view. Ivermectin is clean ivermectin. There's no nanoparticles in ivermectin any more than there's nanoparticles in Benadryl. We'll wait and see on that. You know, maybe there'll be some kind of proof 4 months from now that's sort of going to make me look ridiculous, but I doubt it very much. I think ivermectin, from proper sources, is a completely safe, not adulterated medication whatsoever. It's safer than Tylenol. It's safer than penicillin. It can be used suitably by people to assist themselves with vaccine injury and many other circumstances that William and the two Williams know lots about. I think that's a red herring. But what is not a red herring is what Speaker Rose, McKernan, and Buchholz are showing us. DNA, fully one-third of the weight of what was put into our arms, whether Pfizer or Moderna, one-third was DNA fragments, only two-thirds was RNA. Way too much of both. Way too much of both.
Absolutely scandalous. Yeah, I don't...
Okay, well, kind of getting short on time here, but... Dr. Shoemaker is 100% correct. Ivermectin is fine. Unless you get it from a disreputable source that has manufactured it less to normal tolerances. It's a fine. In fact, it's a miracle in many cases. It's close. Mm-hmm. It's as close as we have to an antidote. It has acted like
so.
An antidote. I mean,
I
how many times
so.
Have we heard stories like someone's dying in the hospital of COVID, and a family member sneaks some in and gives it to the... I've heard this several times. And gives this to the person in the hospital. And they get better the next day, and the doctors can't believe it. So do your research, do your studying, but don't buy into the alarmism about ivermectin. It's a lie.
Yep.
Okay. Is any more of that you want to hear? Or is that
well,
it?
He did address the fertility claim.
All right. Is that Dr. Bay?
No. Let's see. You've got to go up to, I think, 14 minutes or so.
I'm at 13:35 now. I can go
up
to 14.
Yeah, just let it run. Go ahead. Let it run.
All right. You can hear it okay?
And then I did find this testimonial on the red light thing with the ivermectin.
Oh, good. All right. Here we go.
A professional opinion on the ivermectin because, of course, I haven't been in clinical practice for almost 2.5 years now. But as an outsider's perspective, it does seem suspicious to me that ivermectin is again facing some credibility attacks, much like in the beginning of the pandemic, along with hydroxychloroquine. And I do note that here in Australia, still one of the suspended doctors that's facing deregistration is continuing her battle in the courts, Dr. Miley Trin. Her crime was to prescribe ivermectin, and they are not letting that case go. She has been fighting hard, but neither side is backing down. So I think that ivermectin, rightly or wrongly, is under attack, and we'll find out, Chris, as to the truth of that in the future, I hope.
I'll just add one quick other addition to that. There was a recent stir made, quite a big stir, by Dr. Mike Eden, who worked, I believe he worked for Pfizer, was a vice president of Pfizer, worked with the vaccines.
Oh, yes. A very high vice president within Pfizer, in every sense, for 15 years or more.
Yeah, and you know, and he came out with this allegation suddenly, all of a sudden, that ivermectin is extremely a fertility toxin, the most you know, the most extreme dangerous fertility toxin he's ever seen, and that someone gave him a stack of papers like this, and I thought, okay, and it was making the rounds, and I had dozens of emails about this from people who were panicking and saying, Dr. Macus, what's this? What are your thoughts on this? You know, Dr. Eden's video or interview, where he was making allegations on ivermectin, and I did a really deep dive into this. It took me a few days, and I read, you know, probably about close to 20 papers on this, and I just couldn't find any evidence of this. I mean, yes, there is some evidence of you know, reproductive issues in mice and rats. There's sort of a questionable findings in rabbits, and as you go sort of into sort of the higher, you know, the larger mammals, there's no evidence of that at all. If anything, you know, you look at rams and bulls and horses, and there's been no evidence, no reports of any kind of fertility issues over the last several decades. And again, if you're going to make that kind of an allegation, you have to back it up. You can't just kind of throw it out there. And so that's another example of a recent attack on ivermectin.
Okay. You got the picture. I think, without any doubt, the destroyer of fertility is the spike protein. It's the injection. It's shedding. And it's the virus itself. Those mess up the human body in so many ways, it's not funny. Okay, go ahead with your red light.
Okay, this woman says, and this was in the Vax injury group, I just wanted to share something that has really helped me. I had two Modernas in the spring of 2021. I was in really bad shape. Basically, I couldn't walk for 3 years. Full body aches like the flu times 10. I did regenerative medicine, which definitely moved the needle and helped a lot, but I was still not that mobile, and I definitely was not able to work out. I knew I needed to detox the spike protein. Ivermectin plus sauna helped a lot, but what has really helped getting this thing out of me has been ivermectin plus a red light therapy called UltraSlim. Being bedridden for 3 years and having chronic fatigue on top of things, needing a ton of protein, I had gained some weight, and I was still unable to work out, so I thought I would try this light just to lose some weight. It turns out that this light is somehow either detoxing or killing off the spike protein. I'm about 90% better, and I've been going for about 2 months. I was not getting better at all on my own. It was as if I was getting worse and worse as time went on until I first sought treatment. I'm hoping this helps someone who might need it. I'm glad for this group and for the community of people supporting each other. So this UltraSlim, I guess, is some kind of a franchise that basically focuses on weight loss. And part of the therapy is that they expose these problem areas to red light. And so that's what she was after. She wasn't looking to detox spikes. She was looking to lose weight. But what she ended up finding out is that the red light helped her symptoms. Pretty amazing.
Very much so.
So like I said, there is evidence for that. There is this published paper on red light having that effect on TLR4, toll-like receptor 4, and all the inflammatory cytokines that go along with that, which are particularly prevalent in the brain.
All right. We have...
on exposure to spike.
Very important information. Here's out of the crazy as hell file. I don't know if I should. Dr. Lee Merritt is now saying turbo cancer is just parasites. That's it. Just parasites. No problem. And then we have Dr. Artis is at it again. He's still pushing nicotine. Nicotine does it all. No, it doesn't. So there's so much going on out there.
The claims are pretty outrageous. That caught my eye.
Yeah. No, it's
nicotine is the cure for COVID.
No, it's not.
This is outrageous. It's outrageous.
Yeah.
Nicotine was always the antidote and always the cure.
let's check this
nicotine
out.
Nicotine can reverse and dissolve brain tumors in less than 72 hours.
Yeah. Coming up on Friday, we'll have a report on copper, which Erica was the first to sound the alarm about that I know about, and we'll cover that. On this nicotine thing, these are quotes in the publication. Every virus on Earth is beaten with nicotine. Nicotine is the cure for COVID. These are statements. Quote, nicotine was always the antidote and always the cure. Quote, nicotine by itself has been proven to reverse, prevent, and even cure people with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, arthritis, and more. Quote, nicotine can reverse and dissolve brain tumors in less than 72 hours. Quote, nicotine reduces autistic behaviors. Quote, nicotine diabetes. Anyhow, this is so nutty, I didn't even want to go any further into it. It's just crazy. And you have to be really careful out there because you're going to get conned. You're going to get lied to.
You know, people want simple solutions. They don't want to have to, you know, follow some protracted protocol to try to get their health back.
They don't want to do the work. No. No, it's incredible. Calling nicotine the cure for anything of enhanced or important medical gravity is crazy. There's no proof for any of it. Sorry. All right. Thank you. I think we got through a lot of it tonight, and hopefully all of you out there will listen to this program again if you need to. Share it. It's for you. That's why we're doing this. So good job, young lady. Thank you. Talk soon.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
All right, we're going to pause on that note and come right back in about 6 or 7 minutes. Stay right there.